You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, Anita Marks with you here at 98.7 ESPN. Typically I like to call it a Sunday fun day. I know a lot of times in the society that we're living in right now, I'm sure that it's not a lot of fun for most people. And unfortunately, a lot of the conversation that that we have pertaining to sports, beyond the fact that Yankee fans have to feel really good about themselves right now, Yankees 6-1, they took care of the Boston Red Sox last night, 5-2. Judge is just on a tear. You've got Paxton going later on this evening. First pitch will be around 7 o'clock. The Mets, not so great. They're sitting with a 3-6 record. They're going to play later on today at 1 o'clock. A lot of the conversation pertaining to professional sports is all about the pandemic and COVID-19. It just is. As much as we try to get away from it, we cannot, because it is our reality right now. And, you know, this is what leagues and this is what players and athletes are struggling with. So this is how our show is going to break down for you today. Buster Olney is going to join us in our first hour around 9:45. Excited to have Buster on. I've known Buster for a while. And big news, as I'm sure you're listening to Sports Talk Radio, you follow sports, you know the story behind the Miami Marlins and their players testing positive. Day before yesterday, the players that were quarantined in Philadelphia all got on a bus and drove back to Miami from Philadelphia. So where it stands right now, 24 games have been postponed in Major League Baseball. And you've got 25, if not more, players slash staff that are infected right now in Major League Baseball. And it really centers around the Marlins and the Cardinals. Of course, there's other concerns with other teams that have played these two organizations. But really what we have come to realize is that we just don't know about this disease. We don't know about this virus. We don't know about COVID-19. We don't know how it operates. Truly, we have an idea. You know, this is what's called practice medicine, because we're doctors are practicing, hospitals are practicing, but there's so much that we and the experts still don't know about this virus. So, unfortunately, a lot of leagues are kind of flying by the seat of their pants. It just seems that the NBA and the NHL, because they have had the ability to continue their seasons in bubbles, it's working for them better than it is Major League Baseball. So I had Craig Mish on the show with me yesterday. I was on last night from 7 to 10. Craig Mish is a dear friend of mine. I've known him for, gosh, almost 20 years. He covers the Marlins. He was on with me yesterday. And, you know, there's still an investigation going on right now in regard to what happened with the Marlins. You know, I know there's a lot of speculation. There's reports out there that while they were in Atlanta for the exhibition games, they went out on the town. They didn't follow protocol. They didn't stay in their hotel. They hung out in the hotel lobby instead of staying in their room. Look, prior to all this starting, this was my biggest concern, if you listen to me on the weekends. You know, and one of those things like art imitates life, right? Well, I think sport imitates life. In a sense that, let's be honest, we've all gotten a little bit more relaxed when it comes to this pandemic, including myself. I'm going to throw myself as well. I'm going to be perfectly honest and transparent with you. I remember in March, I was terrified to step out of my door, just absolutely terrified. The only time that I would leave my apartment was to walk my dogs, or once a day in the morning, I would go to my little supermarket right around the corner. And I would go at like exactly at 9 a.m. because the senior citizens were only allowed in from 8 to 9 a.m. And you knew that that was the time that, you know, the supermarket was the most safe because of the disinfectant and how clean it was in the morning for these senior citizens to come in. And I would wait outside till like 8:59. And I would go in with my mask and my gloves and my hazmat suit. No, just kidding. I wasn't that bad. But I was pretty, I was pretty scared. I would get what I need. You know, I was a hoarder when it comes to any type of Clorox wipes or whatever wipes that have any kind of alcohol on them. I walk into my back room. It's unbelievable. I could probably start a store here to sell them because I hoarded so much. I was a mess. I'd come home. I wouldn't leave my apartment. you know, but I'm much different right now. I mean, granted, yes, that was March. It was still cooler out. It's warm now. We're in the summer. I'm still doing things, you know, that are safe. I'm golfing, social distancing. I've taken up tennis. I'm hiking. If you listen to me, you know how my life has changed. I'm not going into restaurants. I'm not sitting in Corona tubs that are made out of wood to eat. I'm not doing that. There's still certain things that I'm not doing, but I'm a little bit more relaxed. And obviously a big part of that, especially for us here in New York and New Jersey, is because, you know, our numbers have gone down. We got hit first. We got hit hard. Unfortunately, we should have been the example that the rest of the country follows, and that hasn't been the case. And that's why Florida is still on the rise. Arizona, I mean, there's other states out there that didn't do what New Jersey and New York did, unfortunately. And we're in this horrible situation where the death toll continues to rise. COVID contraction continues to rise. But regardless, my whole point is sport imitates life. And if I'm being transparent, I'm sure that I am reaching out to somebody out there who's in the same boat as I am, where we've got a little bit more laxed, a little bit more relaxed in how we operate and how we go about our lives, whether it's wearing a mask. I can't remember the last time I put on gloves. However, I'm using the, you know, the disinfectant, the gel on my hand. I mean, I don't even know if I could give a fingerprint right now in regards to the amount of times that I wash my hands and how much disinfectant I use on my hands. But where I'm going with this is we're in order for sports, whether it's Major League Baseball, I know that we are all, at least I know, me, my friends, we are praying that the NFL season happens and doesn't get disrupted and players do what they need to do. And the league is pretty much what the league is, what the NFL is trying to do is they are relying on teams to bubble themselves. Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred was hoping and counting that players would be responsible in this, and teammates would hold each other accountable for one another. And obviously that didn't happen with the Marlins. Again, an investigation is still happening. And again, I had Craig Mish on the show yesterday, and you know, he said he wants to reserve judgment until the final investigation is revealed in what happened with the Marlins. But there are a number of reports that they went out. They went out. They hung out in the team hotel. Until we as a society, until players across the board understand the gravity in this virus and what they need to do and the sacrifices they need to make in order for a season in a league to be successful, it will not be successful. This was just the first week of Major League Baseball and this happened. And now you've got Cardinal players and staff. Now I want to believe it's up to four now that have tested positive. I don't, again, if you know anything about me, I'm not a negative Nelly. I'm always very positive. I'm not very optimistic. I'm not very optimistic in we as humans and we as Americans. Let's really have an honest conversation here in just how spoiled we are as Americans. You know, I, and again, I am including myself in that. Please understand, I am not calling anyone out. We are spoiled to the point where we enjoy our lives so much that we are having a very difficult time sacrificing our day-to-day lives and what we want to do and what we shouldn't do. How do we expect spoiled athletes? And again, I'm not painting a broad brush. I've covered sports for a long time. There's some phenomenal men and women that are professional athletes, but the majority of them are spoiled. They are entitled. because we live in a society where we place professional athletes on this pedestal, on this podium that is above teachers, that is above scientists, that is above people that actually, in all honesty, should be placed above professional athletes. But that's not the society we live in. And so Silver Spoon, whatever you want to call it, they've been blessed by God. There's coaches that have realized it and people who've realized it from a very young age and just entitled. And so if it's difficult for us as average Joe Schmoes, that's what I consider myself, how do we honestly expect athletes to sacrifice even more than us? When we are having a hard time sacrificing and we are getting relaxed with the virus and we're not doing the right things that we need to do. And again, I am including myself in this conversation. I am not calling anyone out. So I don't even though Rob Manfred, again, I woke up Saturday morning to prep for my show, and what was trending on social media was that Rob Manfred was potentially going to shut down or halt the season, suspend the season on Monday. Well, since then, he's come out and has said that that's not the case. He's not a quitter. He's reaching out to Major League Baseball's PA. Hey, listen, you know, you need to do a better job managing COVID-19 and managing your players and letting them know what they can and cannot do. And here's another thing. It's beyond going out, whether you're in Atlanta and you want to go to, you know, some strip joint for some great wings. It's high-fiving. It's spitting. It's not wearing a mask while you're playing. It's all those things as well. And I get it. Listen, I'm a creature of habit. Athletes are beyond, you know, they're beyond creatures of habit. I mean, it's everything is just, you know, they're very superstitious. Certain things they do, right? Like they have to step over the third baseline or the first baseline, all that stuff. But there's so much that has to change. And there's so much that we as a society and professional athletes have to sacrifice in order for all leagues to be successful. Because not Major League Baseball and the NFL, they can't, there's too many people involved and there's too much money to put those two leagues in a bubble. It's just, it's too much. And at the end of the day, let's be honest, this is all about money. It comes down to money. Major League Baseball is flying by the seat of their pants. They went into this too soon, too quick, T's not crossed, I's not dotted, relying on a lot of other things that are out of their control to make this work. And the NFL is doing the same thing. Let's be honest. So we're going to have Buster Olney on the show. We'll talk to him about, you know, where Major League Baseball is at right now. If we've got some sound from Buster Olney. He was on some other programs. We'll play for you when we get back from our break. Sal and Andy, I see you guys. I'll get you guys as soon as we get back from this break. I promise you guys will be first up. But, you know, we need to have an honest conversation here about how sport imitates life. Life is imitating sport right now. We're all in the same boat. I'm not going to sit here and I'm not going to rip these Marlin players when a lot of us are doing the same thing. It's not wise. They should be more responsible. They've got an entire league on their shoulders, not just the Marlins, but all players in Major League Baseball, all professional athletes. More responsibility. What do I have? I have the responsibility of five dogs who actually have been behaving for the first 60 minutes of the show. I've got a responsibility to my mother, my 80-year-old mother. If she knew I said she was 80, she's 76, down in Florida. I'm doing some soul searching here live on the show. If I was a Major League Baseball player, if I was an NFL player, in, I don't have children. I wouldn't opt out. I would play. But at the same time, I know me and knowing the responsibility that I have, not just for myself and my career, but for my teammates and the team that pays me and the ownership that believed in me and drafted me or signed me as a free agent. I know me and I know that I would be more accountable. I don't know if that holds true for every professional athlete that plays in these leagues. I don't believe it does, and I don't believe it will. And unless it does, they're it's not going to sustain. It just won't.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Buster, hi. First and foremost, how are you, my friend? How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Everyone's safe in my orbit. I hope the same is true for you, Anita.
Thank you. Yes, I have a mom in her late 70s who's down in Florida. I talk to her. I call her every day. I've become the parent buster. Right? I call her every day. I'm like, are you staying in? Wear your mask. You know, put on your glove. You know, all that. So she's doing fine. But thank you for asking. I appreciate it. All right. I mean, let's dive into what's going on with Major League Baseball. Where we're at right now, I'm hearing Marlins players, and I understand an investigation is still pending, the results of that investigation. But from what is being speculated is that they went out to a club in Atlanta. Also, now I'm hearing reports that the St. Louis Cardinal players went to a casino. Is that what you're hearing as well, Buster?
I mean, I've heard different stories about various people on the team, but I have not independently confirmed any of that. I think the general feeling, though, around baseball is that the Marlins and Cardinals individually were not as careful as they should have been. I've heard stories about, players hanging out in the lobby, with other people at the hotels where they are. That under the current circumstance, it's just too loose. And I think that's, what's happened in the last week, I think serves as a reminder that, look, everyone's going to have to redouble. They're going to have to try to plug some of the holes in the health and safety protocol and to put themselves in a better place. You had Lorenzo Cain opt out yesterday of the Milwaukee Brewers, and you hear from agents about a lot of, concern and trepidation among some of their players. I will tell you that they're also, team officials and players who are saying, you know what, we got this. Like, our guys are handling this well, but clearly the trajectory has to change from what happened in the last week.
A few weeks ago, when the PGA Tour was the only thing happening, the second stop was in Hilton Head. And at that point in time, Hilton Head, I want to say, was a 24% COVID contraction rate. And the PGA Tour had a stop there. Some of the players went out. Following that, Brooks Koepka's caddy came down with COVID-19. Webb Simpson's, one of his children, came down with COVID-19. Anyway, long story short, players got together and said, hey, stop this BS. We need to be accountable for one another. This is our career. This is our livelihood. We need to follow the protocol. We need to be more responsible. And since then, little COVID cases here and there, but not to the extent that they were anticipating when the tour first got resumed. That's what needs to happen here, Buster. But I know you've got so many young guys, and there's so many players.
Yeah.
That unless it's not about having one bad apple, right? Like I used this analogy just a second ago. You can't just, when you have a bowl and you've got a bad apple in that bowl, you just can't throw out the bad apple. The bad apple will make all the apples bad. Like, there's no, like, with this virus, you can't have one person misstep. And I don't know how you can police that with as many players in Major League Baseball.
100%. People have asked the question, why is baseball handling this differently than, say, the NBA or the NHL with their bubbles? The fact is that the sheer volume of players is so much greater that it makes it that much greater of a challenge. And to your point, I had a baseball executive say to me at the beginning of this, look, we're only as strong as our weakest link. The a lot of teams feeling like they're following the protocol, and then the Marlins pop up and all these dominoes fall in the wrong direction. I will say this. I also feel like that baseball is different in that you feel like the NBA and the NHL, they're all pulling in the same direction. They're all on the same side of the rope and they're working together. Yesterday, Rob Manfred telling our Carl Ravitch, the players need to do better. John Lester answering back. In the last week, we had tweets from David Price, Anthony Rizzo, other players, you know, calling into question, you know, about the, some of the health and safety protocol. It makes me shake my head. Like, you wish that, you know, in this time when they really all need to be pulling together, that you know, distrust, suspicion, which is at its absolute worst since 1995 between Major League Baseball and the Player Association, it just doesn't feel that way. And Rob's statement, while, you know, he really, I think, was trying to impart the message of, you know, I'm not a quitter, we can make this work, when he says the players need to do better, that made a lot of people mad in the game. That made a lot of players mad, and quite frankly, I don't blame them.
Again, Buster Olney joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Buster, Eduardo Rodriguez, pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, 27 years old, shut down for the season because of an inflamed heart due to contracting COVID-19. Now, this is, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is a player who didn't have to be hospitalized, wasn't put on any type of breathing apparatus, wasn't put on hydrochloro, whatever, however you pronounce it. But we don't know a lot about this virus. We're sitting here. Here's the thing, Buster. I think because we're talking about professional athletes, the healthiest people on the planet, and very few, if any, are getting to that stage. And God bless. Thank God that they have to be hospitalized. And we've got, like, you standing outside of a hospital reporting on Sports Center every 5 minutes. Because that's not the visualization we have. I don't think athletes are taking it as serious. But here's the thing. We don't know a lot about this virus. And now this young 27-year-old is shut down. Who knows if he'll ever be able to play again? What can you tell us about Eduardo Rodriguez, Buster?
Yeah, what Chaim Bloom, who heads up baseball operations for the Red Sox, told reporters yesterday was that they believe that he's going to be fine going forward. But to your point, everything is new in terms of the fallout from the coronavirus. The symptoms that he's displayed, the issue that he's displayed with his heart, it has happened with other coronavirus victims. And so it is going to be a concern going forward. Look, I've thought all along that the Russian roulette in this whole thing is, will a player, especially a player of prominence, what will happen if someone like that were to get really sick or, God forbid, worse? And I've said that on SportsCenter a few times. And last night, after we got news of Eduardo Rodriguez, a veteran player texted me, said, well, is this the one? Is this the domino that falls? Because I think that if that happens, that will completely alter the conversation. Then some of the players who right now might be feeling anxious, might be feeling nervous, might just say, you know what, I'm taking it to the house. And that is a big concern for baseball, is, you know, they play more games and teams drop to the bottom of the standings. There's an anticipation at the team level among agents that there are going to be players, as their team becomes less relevant, are going to say, you know what, I'm done taking risks, I'm going home.
Buster, last question for you before I let you go, and you can continue with your Sunday fun day, and hopefully it's an enjoyable one for you. I'm just throwing this out. In order for Major League Baseball, in order for any, across the board, not just Major League Baseball, to what extent fines for players who step out, who don't follow protocol, who put everybody else in jeopardy, do you feel that would work?
No, because I feel, you know, the great challenge, and I heard this from players, and I heard it from staffers, they really felt all along the idea that you were going to get a lot of players who were in their early 20s to effectively live like monks for 2 months was going to be a challenge. And I, you know, regardless of whether or not they would get fined $5,000 or $10,000 or $50,000, I don't think it would change their behavior. The union would also probably grieve it, and there away we go. One thing I do hear is that as part of this Marlins investigation, that there may be some ramifications for the Marlins organization. There may be some sort of a penalty coming down on them for specific acts that are determined through this investigation.
Buster, thank you for your time this morning. I really do appreciate it. It's great to hear your voice. I'm glad that you're safe and healthy, and Fingers crossed that this all works out.
Absolutely, Nita. All the best to your mom.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks with you here on 98.7 ESPN on this Sunday morning. Without further ado, Rich Cimini joins us, does an excellent job covering the Jets, and will be an interesting season this year. So, Rich, first and foremost, just out of curiosity, I've spoken to a few Giants, media reps. How are you going to be able to cover the Jets this season? Like, are you classified as in a certain phase, or what you'll have access to, or how is that going to work for you?
Yeah, the media policy is really complicated, so I'm not sure the average listener would be interested. But, you know, there's a couple of different tiers, and I think, you know, we've been actually in touch with the Giant writers and coordinating with the respective PR staffs to try to figure out the best solution. And so right now, you know, normally I would be at training camp right now. I'd probably be standing on the practice field talking to you. But because of the ramp-up period, the media won't be allowed out to watch practice until August 12th. And, you know, we will be able to watch practice on a daily basis, but we will have no personal interaction with players or coaches. Everything will be done via video conference. And for the regular season, I'm not sure yet. That policy hasn't been set, but for training camp, it'll be drastically different.
Interesting. It's going to be an interesting year for everybody, that's for sure.
Let's hope there's a year.
Yeah, I know, right? So as we know, Jamal Adams traded to Seattle, and now CJ Mosley opts out. So what can Jets fans honestly expect from this defense, and who the next guys up are going to be, Rich?
Yeah, I understand the frustration of Jet fans. You know, I mean, it looked like a month ago or 2 months ago they were going to have a really good defense on paper with C.J. Mosley coming back. Of course, everybody knows he missed 14 games last year. And I talked to C.J., I think it was in May, and he was just so excited about, you know, coming back. And, you know, it was so frustrating sitting out last year. And now their two best defenders are gone. So I think at linebacker, I guess if you want to call it a silver lining, is they have good depth there. They had to play so many guys last year because Williamson was out, Mosley was out. And so I think your projected starters right now are probably Avery Williamson, even though he's on the PUP list as we speak. But I think the prognosis is good for him and coming off that knee injury. And the other starting spot I would say is probably up in the air. They have, Neville Hewitt, who started a lot last year. They have James Burgess Jr., who started, came out of nowhere last year and played well. And they have the guy they picked up for the Ravens that really no one is talking about, Patrick Owosso. Sorry about that. I'm going to botch that many times this season. But he actually replaced C.J. Mosley in Baltimore initially. He was the heir apparent when Mosley left for the Jets. Now, he did not stick in that job. They ended up removing him. But he does have starting experience, and I think he's an option for Greg Williams.
So, you know, and because I've had several Jets fans call into the show today, Rich. I mean, you know, what can they realistically expect, barring that there is a season and whatnot? You know, what are your expectations for the Jets this season? What's the ceiling for them?
Well, you know, I haven't made a prediction. I think when the schedule came out, I predicted 7-9. That's when they had Jamal Adams and they had C.J. Mosley. So, I mean, it's two big losses. Now, you know, they did play the entire season most of the season without Mosley last year, and they still ended up ranking 7th in total defense. I thought Williams did a fantastic job of juggling the personnel and altering his approach to suit the personnel. But that's with Jamal Adams. And Jamal had a great year, as we all know, and he was such a force in the box. So now they lose another guy, you know, in the box. And so it's going to be really hard to equal that 7th ranking again. And offensively, just so many question marks with so much new personnel, no off season. Chemistry is going to be an issue early in the year. The schedule is really hard early in the year. I think my 7-9 prediction is dropping rapidly.
Rich Cimini joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Rich, we heard from Jamal Adams and a number of other players, not just Jets players, but Dolphins players. You know, their perception and opinion of Adam Gase not really being a great leader of men. you know, and this is a conversation that I've had in how I'm weighing and valuing teams this season is teams that have coaches that are and have a track record of being great leaders. Your thoughts on the conversations, your thoughts and the conversations you've had with players and Adam Gase as a leader, which I feel is going to be so imperative, especially in a pandemic world we live in right now and heading into to this season. You know, is the feeling on the team what we hear from Jamal Adams? Is it not? Is he just bitter? Give us a sense. Give us an idea.
Well, let me say this about the Jamal Adams. You know, obviously everybody knows he slammed Gase in a Daily News story, a day before he got traded. Jamal knew he was getting traded when he made those comments. So to me, that was the ultimate cheap shot. I mean, he knew he was trying to burn down the building, so to speak, knowing he'd never have to walk into that building again to face the people he was criticizing. I mean, to me, that's low class. And I mean, so that's that. You know, if he was so down on Gase, why did he say up until around the Super Bowl, I want to be back in New York? So, I mean, I'd have more respect for him if he requested his trade after the season, when he said he had irreconcilable differences with Gase or didn't believe in Gase. I would have had more respect. But really, that came out after he knew he was going to get traded. But you're right. There is a narrative out there, and you know, some of it from Miami. I mean, star players like Jarvis Landry ended up getting traded. Jay Ajayi ended up getting traded. So he has had some issues with some quote-unquote big-name players. I think it's something to watch going forward. I think each individual case has a different set of circumstances, although when you see it pop up over and over again, let me take that back. Really not over and over again. There have been a few instances. It's not like it happens all the time. It certainly bears watching for sure. I think, you know, the Jets have an unusual dynamic, Anita. I mean, Greg Williams is the head coach of the defense and Adams the head coach of the offense, and that's how the dynamic works. I don't think many defensive players have many interactions with Adam. So it's weird, I know, but that's how it's going for the Jets. But I agree, you know, that narrative should be watched as we move forward.
Interesting. There was talk this week, and I love that. I'm going to go back to what Joe Judge said this week as well, that his comments where he said the healthiest teams are the ones that are going to have success this season and in keeping players healthy from COVID-19, not just, soft tissue injuries. With that being said, the conversation and is the idea and the concept of quarantining a quarterback, keeping that quarterback away from the team just in case a team starting quarterback, like, by the way, Matthew Stafford, by the way, not sure if people are aware of this, he's been placed on the COVID list. Right. For the Detroit Lions, I want to say they have eight players that are on the COVID list right now for the Detroit Lions. To keep that player away from the team and the facility possibly so that just in case during the season your starting quarterback does get COVID-19, is out for 2 weeks, you've got one that you've quarantined that is going to step in and play. I love the philosophy. I think it's brilliant. Do you anticipate the Jets to do that? And if so, with what quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this morning in my column. It is it's been floating out there for a few months. And, Adam Gase did say the other day that they've talked extensively about it internally. So I think it's something the Jets are very interested in doing. And it is a really good insurance policy because, I mean, what if your quarterback room, your starter, you know, on a Friday night tests positive for COVID and, you know, he's been exposed to the backup? What then? I mean, if they both go on a COVID reserve list for that game, I think the Jets have a guy in David Fales who was their backup for the second half of last season. And, you know, he's a journeyman. He's the quintessential journeyman. He's barely played, I think, probably he's thrown maybe 50 NFL passes, but he does know the offense really well. And he's been in Gase's system in a couple of different places, actually three different places. And he would be the ideal candidate where you could have him attend meetings virtually away from the facility, train away from the facility, and if they need him, you know, in an emergency situation, call him in rather than going with the rookie James Morgan, who is clearly not going to be ready to play this year. So I think they're really, really thinking about it. You know, they do have three West Coast trips which, you know, adds some logistical hurdles, you know, for something like that. But it's something I think the Jets are definitely considering.
Rich, last thing, you know, we've been spending a lot of time today talking about Major League Baseball and the Marlins and the Cardinals and what's happened there. Buster Olney's been on, and Buster used a phrase. I think it's naive of us to think that professional athletes in their 20s are going to live like monks in order for this thing to work. And I mean, he had me at that hashtag live like monks, but that's really what professional athletes across the board are going to have to do if they're not in these bubbles that we're seeing in the NBA and the NHL. You've covered this team. You know these players. How confident are you that the roster for the Jets are going to do what they need to do, every single one of them? And it pretty much is living like monks for the next 4 months to make sure that, you know, the NFL doesn't have a situation that we're seeing with Major League Baseball, Rich.
Interesting question. Actually, I don't know these players. There's so many new players on the team, you know, from the this offseason, and we haven't had a chance to even meet them yet. So I don't think the Jets are any different from any other team. And I think what Joe Judge said is accurate. You know, the teams that show the greatest self-discipline and stay the healthiest are the teams that are going to succeed this year. And so I don't think the Jets' 25-year-old players are any different than, say, the Eagles or the Ravens' 25-year-old players. You know, they can't live like monks, but that's what it's going to take. We were thinking of Sam Darnold the other day, and, you know, of course, he had his own issue last year with mono, so he knows what it's like to be taken away from a team for a few weeks, you know, with an illness. And, you know, he said he's basically going to go from his home, his apartment, to the Jet facility and back and forth. And not going to go out. And so the players are not in a bubble, but I think they have to create their own personal bubble as best they can, because that's the only way this is going to work. You're seeing the baseball situation. It could be even worse in football, because you're talking about so many more players, so many more interactions, just because of the nature of the sport and the, you know, the collision nature of the sport. So they're going to have to be that much more disciplined than baseball to even have this a chance to work.
Rich, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. I really do appreciate you, as always. Thank you, my friend. Be safe.
You're welcome. Have a good
you
one.
Got it.
Take care.
Rich Samini joining us here on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks with you here on 98.7 ESPN, Hour 3. Without further ado, Robert Klimko joins us. Writer for the Washington Post, has a very interesting article out right now in regard to the state of college football, specifically Pac-12 players, as well as what's going on in the SEC. Robert, first and foremost, welcome to the show. I know it's been a while since, A, I spoke to you and B, seen you. So glad that you're safe, and thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so... Let's first and foremost, just if you can kind of explain to our listeners, you know, where does the state of college football stand right now? From what I understand, they're going to be meeting Tuesday, and there is the possibility that they just might shut down college football this season, period, right?
I think there's a chance, and I think you're seeing a reaction among administrators to players mobilizing and cases rising. First and foremost, I mean, you've seen outbreaks at numerous universities, including Michigan State and Rutgers. And I think a lot of college administrators, coaches, ADs, presidents are realizing that once you have students come back, it's very likely that you have outbreaks on every team or at least or almost every team in the NCAA, speaking of football. And then I think the second part of this is with the Pac-12 specifically, you're seeing players rising up, banding together in ways that they haven't before. Social media, certainly a big factor in these guys organizing and demanding things that, you know, college football players have wanted for a long time, but never seen the window or had the organizing power to demand. And we're talking about compensation, long-term health benefits for players, you know, far beyond their college football careers, because I think the people organizing are understanding that college athletes have never had more bargaining power than they have right now when they're being asked to potentially play a college football season at indeterminate long-term and short-term risk to their health.
That's for sure. I mean, that's an understatement. From what I understand as well, you know, things like cutting coaches and directors' salaries so that other sports, I love that they're doing that, Robert, right? Like, so that, you know, we know football's king, but requesting that, you know, coaches, you know, there's some coaches out there with $5-7 million a year, cut their salaries back so that you can keep lacrosse or field hockey or soccer. Right?
Right.
I think that's,
right.
I think that's kind of cool. They're also including the ability to have a voice and have a stance in regard to fighting racial injustice. There's a number of things outside of just the COVID-19 health safety related issues. And you know, you're right. I mean, they do have a lot of bargaining power here, because, and I don't mean to ask you a question that you might not know, but I know we're talking about a lot of money that college football programs bring into universities. I mean, there, from what I understand, there's a chance, if there is no college football this season, Robert, there's a chance that some schools will have to shut down, like not open again. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. You know, I think the hardest hit schools will actually be some of the smaller schools that get paid large amounts of money, close to $1 million, just to, you know, in game one of the season or in the last week of the regular season, go to Alabama and get their butts kicked, right? Mm-hmm. The only reason that a team agrees to do that or a program agrees to do that is because Alabama's paying them $1 million.
Right.
And for a lot of programs, for a lot of athletic departments, that keeps most of their sports afloat. So, you know, I don't think you'll see a large number of actual universities shut down. That may happen to some of the smaller schools, but a lot of those smaller schools aren't getting most of their revenue from football. They're getting it from, you know, tuition. Now, a lot of football players in D3, D2 pay tuition, but, you know, that's a group of 65 guys. I don't see that killing a lot of universities. But, yeah, I mean, to your point about the demands kind of spreading across the college sports landscape, and, you know, the specific ask that you help out, that you take money away from administrators and coaches and put it in smaller sports so that they don't shut down. I mean, that's a completely new development in college football labor talks. And I think it's a function of all of these players being so connected to the other athletes across the other sports in ways that they never were before. I mean, before you even get on campus, I think you know, most of these kids follow numerous athletes in other sports at their new school on social media. So you begin to develop those relationships early. There's no way that something like this can happen in the Pac-12 if you don't have a large number of players who can communicate minute to minute and go over all of these proposed demands and come to an agreement. I mean, this is just impossible to do 10, 15 years ago.
Robert Klimko joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You could see his work in the Washington Post. Besides the Pac-12, from what I understand, the SEC had a phone conference, Zoom maybe, I don't know, with this is what we do now, right? We Zoom with a number of players in the SEC, and some of the conversations, some of the responses to the questions that were posed to them are leaking, and they're not very good. What can you tell us about that phone conference?
Right. So the Washington Post obtained a phone conference that's been happening fairly regularly in the SEC between players and medical officials. And they plan on having another one. And it was meant as sort of a confidential airing of questions, grievances, concerns for player leadership across the SEC. We obtained a copy of that audio recording. It was about an hour and 24 minutes long. And it was a really fascinating look into the dynamic that's emerging between these players who are finding their voice and these administrators who are doing everything they can to keep the college football season going in the face of all this medical uncertainty. And, you know, it was just kind of jarring to hear these players ask these really valid questions like, you know, would you let your kids play if they were in this position? Or, you know, how are you going to protect us when all these students who haven't been taking precautions come back to campus and we have to go to class with them? And to hear sort of non-answers from all of these medical officials across the SEC and for it to just feel really completely unresolved. So we wrote a story about that. Yesterday, the SEC put out a statement saying that all the players were happy with the exchange and it was a positive exchange, and essentially saying, hey, at least we're talking to the players, which is actually a good point. I mean, I think a lot of these conferences are not taking player input as they make these decisions.
I sometimes ask myself if college, obviously much different than the pros, because college players are still, you know, waiting to get theirs. If a guy like Trevor Lawrence, if a guy like Justin Fields, if they decide not to play, do you feel that that will kind of open up the floodgates, lack of a better phrase, with a number of other top collegiate athletes who are expected to go in the first three rounds this season? Like, what do you anticipate to happen there?
Yeah, you know, I think those guys will end up setting the standard for the rest of college football, because if, you know, a guy who is going to be picked in the top five says, I don't need to play this year, I still feel confident in my ability in the NFL, then I think a lot of other people are going to follow suit. I think what people are fearful of right now, the guys that are NFL-bound, is that NFL teams will question kind of their love of the game or their dedication to the sport, right? So if you have guys that are at the top of the first round sitting out, then you can say, well, everybody else was doing it. I think the bigger concern for the NCAA and college football and just the prospect of having a season this year are all the guys who are considering opting out who aren't NFL bound, who are freshmen and sophomores, who, you know, may or may not at one point make it to the NFL, but right now are more concerned about their health going forward than anything else. If you see a number of those players opt out, that's when I really feel like the floodgates are going to open. That NFL group is sort of a minority.
Interesting. You can follow Robert Klimko on Twitter at Robert Klimko. One thing before I let you go, because I was on your Twitter feed earlier today, the giant murder hornet has been captured in Washington. And so they are... I find this fascinating. So they are on a quest to find the mother nest before mating season happens. Any update there, Robert?
I am not covering that story, but I'm following it very closely, and I hope that they one day make a movie out of it.
Oh, it's crazy, right? Like 2020. Can 2020 just be over already? Right? Anyway,
yeah, exactly.
Robert, thank you so much for your time this morning. Appreciate it. Make sure, head over online, check out the Washington Post and read Robert's articles. Always on top of stuff. So, Robert, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Check it out now.
That music. It only means one thing. It means Cynthia Freeland's in the house. Here on 98.7 ESPN. Cynthia, what's up? What's up?
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm eating my breakfast of champions. I'm dipping my grilled chicken in hummus. It's like my jam. I know it's my jam.
Protein on protein, you know?
Exactly. First and foremost, everybody should be following Cynthia Freeland on social media. You've been posting all these videos for the NFL Network, and you've got this beautiful back. Where are you? Are you at home, or were you on vacation, or where were you shooting those videos? You look like you were on a beach somewhere.
Well, now I'm on the beach. So back in LA, everything's cool. Had a little mountain scene going on there for a minute, but back to the beach. You know, back to keeping it all sandy and Pacific Ocean-y.
But you were out in the mountains then. Because it also kind of looked like you had a little cabin feel to it. It looked like you were in a cabin somewhere.
I was trying to compete with Brian Billick for who could have the best ranch setting. You know, like him and I were both competing. Like who had the better ranch setting? So
there you go. All right. enough with my chicken. Let's first and foremost. I want to dive into this. You're a big Detroit Lions fan. You're from that area, dude. 8 Lions on the COVID list: Matthew Stafford, Galladay, Hawkinson. Oh my, Your thoughts on this?
Well, on some level, maybe it's better if it happens now and, you know, instead of like, you know, week four when the Lions are about to like, you know, crater their season like always, you know, spoken like a true Lions fan, we're always waiting for the next shoe to drop, right? The other shoe to drop. So maybe it's better that it happens now. And, you know, I don't think Matthew Stafford has any problem learning the playbook. So ultimately, when it comes to being able to kind of adapt after, hopefully everyone will stay healthy. And it will be, they'll have the antibodies and, you know, and by that time there'll be a vaccine, you know, just trying to see things from the positive light. But if there is one positive thing, it is that all of these guys tend to be, it looks like most of them at least, are very familiar with the playbook. So they're not going to need to have as much time. No one has as much time this season. So maybe even a little less is not as big of a deal.
I played golf this past week with a very fantastic gentleman who's a friend of mine who oversees one of the prominent hospitals here in the area. He said that the antibodies don't last forever, and that when you get your antibody test, there's a number that's assigned to it. So you might have like antibodies like at a level 8, and maybe 6 months later you might have antibodies at a level 1.
Right,
which means that when the vaccine comes out, hopefully soon, it's going to be something that's going to be needed every year, kind of like a flu shot, more like a flu shot than, let's say, a polio shot or chickenpox shot.
Right. Yeah, no, I've been hearing about that too. And then I've been hearing about this like T-cell resistance stuff where like some people just won't even feel anything because of the thing that I know is that it feels like we don't really know enough, right?
So, we don't know anything.
Ultimately.
We
know nothing.
I know. Mm-hmm. Patriots players. What are they up to? Eight players now. Listen, I got the Bills at +320 to win that division, and I'm loving it right now. I am loving it right now, Cynthia. Your thoughts?
I bet that got bid up when Cam Newton signed too. I bet some people got it even higher. You know, that's a good.
It went up to +180 when Cam Newton signed with the Patriots. +180.
Okay. All right.
But it's at +120. I think you get it at +130 right now for the Bills to win the division. But the Patriots, a lot of people, I think this is funny. You know, it's so typical, like, you know, how everyone outside of New England views Bill Belichick and the Patriots. Cheaters, conniving. You know, that people actually think that, you know, Bill's trying to talk his players into opting out so that they could just tank for Trevor this year.
I love a good conspiracy theory, you know.
Exactly. But your thoughts on the players that have opted out for New England? I mean, you know, as great of a coach as Bill Belichick is, you know, what are your expectations for them this season, Cynthia?
Yeesh. I think this is going to be a tricky year in New England. They should be, you know, I'd love to have a little sympathy, but I can look at their rings and then, you know, remember that I'm from Michigan and the sympathy goes away. But for me, the thing that I'm looking at there is there really is Bill Belichick, if anyone, is good at the next man up stuff, right? So I'm sure you're not going to replace Dante Hightower. You're losing a lot. I mean, their defense is going to be interesting in the middle of the field, it looks like. So, you know, for me, I just think that when I come down to what I'm looking at there on the field, and then you have to see, like, also remember, CJ Mosley opted out too. So it's not like they're going to be the only team. I think what really is happening there, if I'm being realistic, is Bill said to the players, if you are going to opt out, don't make me wait till August 3rd. Don't make me wait till the last minute. Tell me right now, let's just get this going. Cause it seemed like they all kind of came on the same day earlier than most people. And it seemed like, I don't know. It felt like they were like, hey, you know, level with me here. If you're not going to play, just do it now. Tell me now so I can figure it out with these young guys.
You know, Cynthia Freeland joined us here on 98.7 ESPN. You could see her all over NFL Network. You know, another thing, Bill spoke to the media this week and said that Cam's going to have to compete for a starting job. Also, no preseason games. We went from 4-2 to now 0. Very few padded practices.
Don't we have a bottle of wine on this?
Listen, okay. I'm throwing it out here yet again. Jared Stidham, you could take this to the bank. Jared Stidham starting week one of the regular season +300, +350 in some places. That is cash money. As great as Cam is, I just don't see it. I really still believe that Jared Stidham will be the starting quarterback week one. Not to say that Cam, you know, won't start week three or week five, but week one, I still think it's Stidham, and you could get that at plus 300, Cynthia. And I get a bottle of wine.
I mean, I feel like I'm going to dial up Camus. That's a nice wine, right? We're going to dial up Camus and be like, Anita's coming to buy Cynthia a bottle of wine.
So you're still banking on Cam. You still think Cam is going to be a starting quarterback?
I do. I still think, you know, again, if something weird happens in, and I think our bottle of wine will be off if either one gets hurt, right? Because that's just not fair. But, you know, if something happens, but barring some sort of, you know, new injury, I think it's Cam, week one.
News this week, as well as Antonio Brown, AB, 8-game suspension. Oh, as of right now, now keep in mind, there's another investigation that is pending with his, you know, with his poor choice of behavior with a trainer in his own home. Now that right. is still pending. So it could be more than 8 games, zero pay. He's going to have to go through counseling, yada, yada, yada. But if he signs with a team right now, he can participate in the preseason in practice. But then once the season starts September 5th, then he has to go away from the team. So, you know, we've seen Lamar Jackson, you know, play catch with AB. We've seen Russell Wilson play catch with AB. What are you hearing? Do you think there'll be a landing place for him? Do you think a team will sign him so that they can get him into in practice with him for a few weeks before he has to be put on the shelf? What do you think, Cynthia?
You know, I just don't see going through all the hassle because you look like a jerk. The team that signs him looks like a jerk, and they may or may not. I mean, 8 games is the minimum. It could be even more. Mm-hmm. The return on investment here for what, 3 weeks of preseason? Like, whoop-de-doo, you know, like you're not getting, it's Antonio Brown. You already know who he is and what he's capable of. It's not like you're, you know, getting a rookie that you have no real idea, but he was good in college, right? You've seen Antonio perform at the highest levels, and you've also seen him be not responsible at the highest levels. So if I'm sitting there thinking about which team, of course you'll get some catch being thrown here and there because, you know, these people are friends and they do understand each other. And there is some sort of, you know, often agents will help set up things where, you know, you're trying people out and they're really trying to like make sure their client is taken care of. That's what an agent's supposed to do. So I don't think any of those things are real signs of what's to come unless something happens and, you know, the 8 is the total and that is it. And then we find that out and somehow, it's almost useless because they need to cycle through all the wide receivers that are going to be on the field because, you know, this year the rosters are deeper. You're going to need to know what wide receiver 8 looks like because God forbid something happened with wide receiver 1, 2, and 3. You're going deeper on that depth chart, you know, with COVID and with all these different restrictions. Like you're not going to waste your time. And in my opinion, it'd be foolish to waste your time on a guy who, you know, for sure isn't even possibly going to see the field until week 8, week 9, very earliest.
Again, Cynthia Freeland joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Cynthia, before I let you go, a big topic this week was the top 100 with the NFL Network.
Oh,
I know. What? Just clarify, who voted? Players voted? Was it just players?
Yeah, so it's players that vote. And then they vote like in December. So unfortunately for like a, let's say, called Patrick Mahomes, like I do understand why he dropped to 4 based on how, because of course I'm a dork and I look into how, like when people are voting and what's going on, right? So if you're voting in early December, remember Matt Moore was playing, people didn't know if Patrick Mahomes would be back that season, you know, or not in full capacity. No one knew who was going to win the Super Bowl. We now have, you know, 6 months of space between when they voted and when this all came out. So it seems a little silly, right? But ultimately the players vote and they vote each team. I do believe this was a record number of votes this year. Every year it's more and more. Sometimes you can see which teams maybe forgot to vote. But this season, I think it's pretty well, each team is well represented in terms of numbers of players who voted. And it's just timing thing, right? Like the timing thing does make a big difference. It does make, remember, I think that, you know, some people have been kind of up in arms that Jimmy Garoppolo was ranked higher than Dak Prescott, for example. And it's funny because at that time, I think, you know, the Cowboys had some losses and the Cowboys were kind of in that, you know, was it the Cowboys or Eagles who were going to just win barely enough games to represent the NFC East, maybe with a 8-8 schedule, right? So 8-8 results. So it's the timing that does influence when these votes come out. But I think for the most part, you're seeing a decent, like, look at them in clusters and you're seeing about the right cluster. Like, who are the top 10 guys? Okay, you can finagle the numbers a little bit, but that's about right. Who are the top 20? That's about right. That's kind of my takeaway.
All right. Well, one guy that wasn't on the list is Carson Wentz. How'd that happen?
You know how that happened? It happened because the Eagles and Cowboys were in that tangle for who's going to, like, kind of, it didn't feel like last season, like, neither one really wanted to win. It was like, I guess you could win, right? So, kept dropping weird games. So, I think that when it comes to Carson Wentz, he had that season, all those drops by his receivers made him look bad. And it just, he didn't look like that guy from his MVP sort of, before he got hurt Super Bowl year, he was in MVP contention. And going from that to what we saw this season felt like a big drop-off. And Eagles fans are punishing, and other players are punishing when it comes to stuff like that. Because there are a lot of guys who they think they only get to vote on. I think they have, I want to say, there's a finite number of votes that each one gets to cast. So it's not like they can say who are the top three or four quarterbacks. It's like, they have like 20 total players, or I can't remember the exact number, but there's a finite number. They can't just vote everyone in. So
yeah, but to say that Carson Wentz isn't better than like Darren Waller,
girl, I'm with you. I'm with
Chris
you. But you
Carlin,
have to remember,
or Chris
you
Carson,
have to remember.
Or
but remember, I'm, if you're a linebacker, if you're a running back, and you're voting, don't you think maybe you're a little biased to be like, okay, my quarterback's probably the right one, and then maybe this other like guy in my, like, if I'm Chris Carson, and I'm like, okay, well, Russell Wilson for sure, and then Aaron Donald because that guy's nasty, and then you get to 20 and you're like, well, I forgot Carson Wentz. Like, I don't think it's like, you know,
Ryan Tannehill at 68, Cynthia. I'd take Carson Wentz 7 days a week and twice on Sunday over Ryan Tannehill.
A lot of Titans were voting. Maybe the Titans voted twice.
I mean, you know, I know we're living, we live in this very, sensitive world right now when it comes to Black Lives Matter, and rightfully so, and in the movement and whatnot. I mean, there's some talk, there's some speculation that some players, especially on that Eagles team, feel that Carson Wentz is somewhat prejudiced. I can't attest to that. I'm not reporting that at all. I'm just sharing what some of the speculation has been as to why some dissension in that locker room, especially when Nick Foles was there. I don't know. I pray to God that has nothing to do with it. You've got to leave that on the shelf.
Yeah.
When it comes to ranking players, that's all. Cynthia, any final?
I had never heard that. I had never heard that. My only final thing on this top 100 is that I go through and I try to look like by position and by team, right? So I always look at, and I sit there and I try, because I do a whole like who's underrated, who's the most underrated players in the league, and do it based on numbers. And I feel like I didn't see enough Bills love, and I get busted by the Bills fans a lot for not saying enough nice stuff. And I went through specifically, and I need more. Those Bills players need to vote. They need to vote, and they need to vote often, because there weren't enough Bills players on there, in my opinion.
Cynthia, always a pleasure having you on the show. Any final thoughts before we let you go?
Just have a good week. We're here. Sports are back. Like, let's try to enjoy it. And like, oh my goodness, training camp. It'll be so exciting when once we finally get football. Ugh.
I have some good news for you. I don't know how it hasn't happened yet, but apparently the giant murder hornet was captured in Washington, and they're on like this expedition to go and find the mother nest before mating season happens. So,
perfect. We need to get at least one of these like 2020 like horrible things taken care of. So if that's a great one to start.
Cynthia, enjoy the rest of your Sunday Funday, my friend. Great to hear your voice.
Bye.
Take care. Cynthia.
Good to hear you. Bye.